Aoife, you're very welcome to In Business. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, delighted to be here.
So it's that time of year, I think, again, whereby there's lots of sickness going around and people may need to take time off for that, but also possibly time off to care maybe for other people in their family, for example, who might be sick. So there's lots of requests, I think, going off for time off at the moment. It can be quite busy in that instance. So what kind of trends maybe are you noticing on the ground, Aoife?
Yeah, so look, we're very lucky, I suppose, here in Ireland. You know, we have a wide range of workplace leave options. But the flip side to that, and what we often see in practice, is that can cause a lot of confusion as to what applies and when, and especially, as you said, during this winter coughs and cold season, because from one week to the next, you don't know what's going to be flying around. We still have COVID lurking around corners and things like that. So to simplify things, what I often tell clients is to think about this type of leave as falling into two big separate buckets. So on the one hand, we have leave for employees themselves. So I call that like individual leave. And then on the other hand, we have leave to care for someone else. So I'd often refer to that as caregiver leave. So I find that that kind of simple split can help to cut through a lot of the noise and really help you to focus on what's available and when. So if we were to turn first, say, to the first bucket and the individual leave that I mentioned, the most common one that we're all familiar with is obviously annual leave. But one thing that people don't always realise is that annual leave is for rest and recreation. It's not supposed to be used for your sick days when you're genuinely unwell. And under Irish law, annual leave is meant to be taken for rest purposes, so like when you're fit and when you're well, when you can have that genuine rest and time to unwind. So if you fall sick during an annual leave period, that actually ought to be reclassified as sick leave where a medical cert is produced. So that's one area where we often see some confusion. And historically, it wouldn't have been uncommon for employees to ask if they could use annual leave instead of sick leave just to maintain their income, where company sick pay maybe wasn't an option. That's obviously not a practice I would recommend. Firstly, it undermines the statutory protections and the intent of the legislation. And it can even expose employers to claims, you know, that they're denying sick leave rights, for example. And like, thankfully, that's less of an issue today, because we've obviously had the introduction of statutory sick pay in Ireland a couple of years back. So that's actually still quite new. It only arrived here in early 2023. And currently that provides an entitlement to 5 days of paid sick leave at 70% of your salary. And that's capped at €110 per day. It was designed to be phased in gradually. When it first came in back in 2023, it was at the 3-day mark. That moved up then to 5 days. And it was originally planned to go to 7 days in 2025 and to 10 days then this year. And that caused a bit of confusion last year because there was no movement on it for a few months. But the government did actually come out and confirm last year that that entitlement to paid statutory sick leave will remain at 5 days per calendar year. And that decision was taken into account. You know, there were concerns raised by business owners, and in turn that was balanced against income protection need for workers. And my understanding is that after, you know, a careful consideration, a review, the view was that the 5-day sick leave strikes the right balance by giving workers income protection for the 5 days, which is the current entitlement, and after that then illness benefit can kick in to support them if further financial support is required. So, you know, we're at a good place. We've got the 5 days for our own personal sick leave, but it's worth bearing in mind there are some rules and requirements that go with that statutory sick leave, and that includes a requirement that the employee must have completed at least 13 weeks of continuous service with the employer, and a medical certificate will be required. So they're kind of the key points to be aware of in terms of statutory sick leave. But employers can obviously, of course, go over and above the minimum statutory entitlements. That's the minimum only. And many do. Not all do, but many do. And where they do, I suppose, company sick leave or sick pay schemes, they do tend to vary quite a lot. Not every company provides them. Where you tend to see it in the smaller companies, that will typically range somewhere between 7 to 14 days. You know, the big multinationals, you sometimes see that up to 26 weeks, and that's often designed intentionally to align with PHI or your long-term illness insurance cover, which usually kicks in around that mark for a suitably covered claim. I suppose my advice, you know, if you're an employee and you're unwell at the moment and you're kind of wondering what options are available to you, the best starting point is usually your company's employee handbook. you know, if you can't find or if you don't have one of those, I'd be reaching out to a member of your HR team or your manager just to get a clear steer on, you know, what the requirements are, whether it's statutory sick leave that applies, is there, you know, discretionary company sick leave in addition to that. If there's any employers who are listening and they're, you know, wondering or looking for how they can address this topic in the workplace, you know, given the time of year and the coughs and colds and the winter bugs that are floating around, if you haven't already done so, now is a great time to review your sick leave policy and make sure that it is accurate and up to date, especially with all those changes that we've had over the years about, you know, was it 3 days, is it 5 days, is it 7 days? So just conducting one of those reviews to make sure that your policy is accurate, it's clear, and it's up to date. And that can go a long way towards eliminating a lot of the confusion that can arise in respect of sick leave by clearly setting out what the entitlements are, what's the qualifying criteria, what are the notification requirements, and so on. So that can kind of cut through a lot of the queries that come in the workplace. So they're kind of your individual bucket and your individual leave type.
Okay, that's really interesting. And can we talk about carer's leave now and just explain to us, I suppose, what that involves, Aoife?
That's obviously kind of where I'm talking about caregiving responsibilities in terms of caring for another person. So again, you know, here in Ireland, we have lots of different types of leave and particularly family leave. We're in a great position. We've got things like maternity leave, paternity leave, adoptive leave, parental leave, parents leave, and even this new right to request flexible working arrangements. So they're not the types of leave, I suppose, that we're talking about when we're talking about winter illnesses and things. They're obviously quite long term. They're designed to provide leave when a new baby or a new child arrives, or, you know, the ongoing care duties that parents have over the course of childhood. And that in itself could be a whole other podcast. Family leave is huge and there's a lot in it. So I'm going to kind of leave the family leave to one side. And the type of leave that I'm talking about, caregiver leave in terms of short-term winter illnesses, I'd be talking about things like force majeure leave, medical care leave, maybe carer's leave, and occasionally you might see kind of other forms of discretionary leave that a company has rolled out off their own bat, not because of a statutory requirement. But again, they're less common, these types of leave. They come up every now and again. It's not a regular thing like your annual leave or your own sick leave that you kind of would avail of, you know, more regularly. This tends to be kind of sporadic. So it can, these types of leave can be mixed up and they can cause confusion. So the first one that I mentioned there, force majeure leave, that's a paid form of leave that's been around for quite some time. It allows an employee to take paid leave for urgent family reasons where their presence, it really has to be essential due to the injury or illness of certain relatives. The entitlement that is provided for is up to 3 days in any 12-month period or 5 days in a rolling 36-month period. But the thing with force majeure leave is it is very narrowly defined.
Okay.
It applies really only in like urgent, unforeseen crises where the employee's immediate presence it is indispensable, so to speak. So it doesn't include, for example, a child with a routine vomiting bug, or, you know, you get a call from the school saying, can you come in and collect Mary early? She's not feeling well. Or your husband, you know, he's feeling under the weather and wouldn't mind, you know, a helping hand around the house. And I understand, like, this one in particular, I think, can be confusing for people. Like, I remember myself when I was a first-time parent and your baby is sick, like, to you, that's the most serious thing in the world at that point in time.
Yeah.
But it's not what this type of leave or what this legislation is intended to cover. It's really just a serious accident or a genuinely sudden medical emergency. So, you know, even taking my own example there with the sick baby, and we actually do often hear anecdotally from our clients, you know, of people trying to apply force majeure leave to ordinary childhood sickness. But the law is very clear on this, and force majeure leave is really only for crisis level type scenarios, and that's it. But what we do have more recently is medical care leave or care or leave for medical care purposes. This is relatively new and it's actually still often overlooked or not even known about. It's only in since the middle of 2023. And that type of leave provides for 5 days unpaid leave per year. And it's designed for providing significant care or support due to a serious medical reason to a defined family or household member. So look, it is unpaid, but it is something that's there and available to people. And it's a little bit broader than what force majeure leave would be. And eligible individuals here can include a child, a spouse or a civil partner, a cohabitant, a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, or even a person residing in the same household. So the categories of people that are covered, it is definitely a little bit broader.
Okay.
Now, I'm not aware of any cases yet that are teasing out what is actually meant by serious medical reasons or significant care. But what I would take that to mean, just to give some examples, would be maybe, bringing a very sick child or parent to the GP, or, one of those trips to A&E that we all have to do over the years. Maybe caring for someone with a very bad flu who genuinely requires that full support and that presence, managing, other short-term but genuinely significant medical needs. I would say that it doesn't cover minor kind of non-serious type ailments. So say, for example, your teenager has a mild headache and they just want to rest on the sofa for the day. Like, that doesn't require your presence to oversee them and they're watching off the TV, if you know what I mean. So it's a little bit different, but it, as I said, broader than the force majeure leave. And some key features to bear in mind with this one, because they all have kind of different requirements and different criteria. There's no service requirement with medical care leave. One thing that, again, is often forgotten is that the leave can only be taken in full day units. So you're not taking 1 or 2 hours to do a little trip here or there to the doctor. You'll be deemed to take the whole day. And that is, as I said, that's an unpaid day. Also worth bearing in mind, I suppose, is that employees must, under the legislation, as soon as is reasonably practicable, confirm to their employer in writing that they have taken or intend to take this leave, the date of the commencement, the duration, and a summary of the reasons or the facts, why they had to take the leave. So look, for all intents and purposes, I would say that this new type of leave, it goes a long way towards bridging that gap between force majeure, which is kind of your emergency scenario, and then longer term carer supports that we also have covered by Irish legislation. So I suppose that leads me nicely into carer's leave. That's obviously a longer term statutory entitlement, but I mention it, I suppose, because even though it's long term in nature, there can be overlap, and where you see that would be, say, with elderly parents, where maybe they fall victim to a cold or a cough or a flu over this winter period, but that can maybe sometimes lead into something or be part of something that's longer term. So I think it's worth raising some awareness around the carer's leave, because it tends to be one of the lesser known and lesser utilised types of leave. And there's a few reasons for that I'll come to. But just to give you a quick overview of what carer's leave is that it provides employees, there's a service requirement here. Yet again, you have to have worked continuously for 12 months with your employer, and it will then provide a right to time off to provide full-time care for a relevant person for up to 104 weeks or 2 years. And that can be extended up to a maximum total of 208 weeks where you're caring for more than one individual. So, you might see a situation where somebody's caring for both elderly parents, for example.
And what specific features maybe then, Aoife, should people be aware of here in regards to this type of leave?
It must be taken in minimum blocks of 13 weeks. And you are required to get a certification from the Department of Social Protection to confirm that the person is in need of full-time care and attention. The relevant person, they don't need to be a family member as such, but the leave is unpaid again. And just to say, though, there may be a carer's benefit that some employees will care for. So because I mentioned it's not that common and it's often overlooked, I would say that the reasons for that are probably because it's unpaid, it's long-term, there's a lot of kind of steps that go, boxes to be ticked, will we say, mm-hmm. before you kind of qualify. So it does tend to be less commonly used, but nevertheless, it is an important option for situations where ongoing care is required. So yeah, look, when we're talking about the shorter term illnesses over the winter period, these are the kind of key types of leave that we would see people looking to use or being entitled to use. And there is obviously a large degree of overlap and there's a lot in it, and particularly for our employers, I think there's a lot to grapple with.
You've gone through a lot there. There's a lot to take in. And you mentioned as well that there is kind of confusion, I suppose, sometimes around the different types of leave and what people should be taking. So how are companies maybe responding to that challenge?
So I think going back to your policies, like your first principles almost, is the best thing that employers can do to deal with this, because not only are they educating themselves by making sure that they have accurate and up-to-date policies in place, they're ensuring that, they're providing the correct legal entitlements, but you're also going to cut through a lot of the noise and the questions that tend to come into either HR or frontline managers, where you've got clear policies, clear procedures, clear notification requirements, the information is to hand. So that's often kind of your first port of call where you're trying to address this in the workplace, is making sure you're on top of the latest developments, making sure that your policies are up to date and correct. We often write about this topic, for example, and we'll break them down in clear, easy to digest summaries. And, just educating yourself is a really good starting place as well.
Yeah. And I suppose that kind of ties into my next question actually as well, Aoife, because in terms of cover, maybe then, does it depend on the specific leave that's being taken, whether a company can bring in cover for that person that's on leave?
Yeah, I would say you tend to see the types of temporary cover with the longer term leaves where you know somebody, it's a planned kind of an intentional extended period of leave. And you tend to see that more with the family type leaves that I mentioned earlier, like your maternity leave or maybe parental leave, which is your unpaid entitlement for 26 weeks. In those situations, you tend to see the temporary cover brought in, or perhaps with carer's leave, because obviously that's a longer one as well. Whereas with the other shorter term leave, generally speaking, less so, I would say, less common, less of a need to do it if it's just a day or so here or there. But that will obviously then as well depend on the nature of your business and the resources that are available to step in, whether the work can kind of be postponed for a day or two, or whether you need to bring someone in. So it's a little bit of a circumstance specific one.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine. So I suppose just before we wrap up, in terms of maybe some of the key takeaways that employers must be aware of, and employees, I suppose, as well, what would be some of the main points of advice you would give them?
Yeah, so, well, at the risk of repeating myself, I think that education piece is key, as are your policies, and, you know, being aware of little things like we discussed at the start of this conversation, you know, not using annual leave for sick leave and best practices such as that. I think keeping an eye on developments in this space as well. You know, we may see further guidance from the Workplace Relations Commission, for example, as cases begin to test, you know, the boundaries and the meaning of things like serious medical reasons for medical care leave. I think it's likely that we're going to see increased enforcement of sick leave rights, particularly penalisation claims. So again, that kind of links into the importance of being aware and familiar of what your employees' entitlements are and making sure that you're complying with those. You know, we discussed also about the changes that we've seen in statutory sick leave entitlements and how that kind of started out with Plan A and kind of then moved to Plan B. Maybe we may potentially see a further review of that paused kind of expansion, probably unlikely, and will obviously depend on economic conditions and other factors over the coming years, but no harm in keeping an eye on that as well.
Absolutely. You mentioned as well, just before we finish up, that you had different resources, I suppose, and advice that was available in terms of things that you've written, I suppose, to make it life a little bit easier for people, because there is a lot to take away from it. Is that available on the website, or where can people access it, Aoife?
Yeah, so we generally post up on the EY Law website. We have an insights page, and I have actually, I had an older one of these articles that I've been updating for this winter period. So that'll be up there shortly. And I'm happy to share the link with you if that would be useful for listeners.
Oh, fantastic. It certainly would. Aoife, thanks so much, because there is so much, as we said, there to go through, but you've explained it in great detail and made it easy to understand as well. But thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show this evening. It's been lovely to talk to you.
No problem. My pleasure. Thanks, Emil.